Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. Are you ready for some football? A Monday night party edition as we look ahead to the Bengals and Steelers on Monday night football. Coming up, Dave Lapham joins me to discuss the latest Bengals news, including a season-ending injury for one of the best players in franchise history, Geno Atkins. My one-on-one player interview this week is with offensive lineman Fred Johnson, who discusses his bout with COVID-19. And in our Know the Foe segment, former Pittsburgh cornerback Ike Taylor shares his thoughts on the Steelers and why he thinks the Bengals have found their franchise quarterback in Joe Burrow. The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. And here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since coffee, vanilla, peanut butter. My wife, Peg, is a marathoner and a much healthier eater than I am. If left to my own devices, I can crush salty snacks like a 350-pound nose tackle. Well, recently, Peg started making this coffee, vanilla, peanut butter spread found in the Run Fast, Eat Slow cookbook. And it's a game changer. I like to spread some on a banana. Peg typically pairs it with chunks of an apple. And it's phenomenal. So, if you don't believe that delicious and nutritious belong in the same sentence, I highly recommend giving the coffee vanilla peanut butter spread recipe from the Run Fast, Eat Slow cookbook a try. Now, let's get to football, beginning with a visit with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, let's start with the news from Wednesday that Geno Atkins is done for the year, going on season-ending IR with his shoulder injury, finishes with no sacks this year in 11 games. Earlier in the season, when people were ripping the effort of Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins, you were really the first person to defend Geno and say he was trying to fight through a serious injury. What do you make of his effort this season?
He damaged that shoulder, I guess rotator cuff is the part of the shoulder that he damaged warming up for the inter squad scrimmage, you know, in the end zone, just doing warm-ups with the offensive and defensive line. And, you know, he tried to battle through it. He missed a month and then tried to battle through it, but he just couldn't reach and grab with that right arm. He was literally one-armed and very, very deficient in what he was trying to get done. I mean, his whole thing is power football. And power football, you have to use your hands. I mean, that's a big part of it. And he couldn't. He couldn't really. His right side of his upper body was useless. So I admire the fact that he tried to give everything he could, but he was just basically a shell of himself. And sounds like in the Dallas game, he exacerbated the problem. And at that point in time, might as well just shut it down.
You thought he was on his way to having a good year in training camp, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a couple times, you know, when we were watching pass rush together, I'm like, man, Geno, he's got I didn't see, you know, that explosion. And I thought not this season, the season before last year, that it's like, maybe he's kind of rounding third and heading for home, as the lovable lefty used to say. But and then I saw him at training camp. It's like, man, this offseason really did him a lot, did well for him. So, and then, boy, he gets hurt and it all unravels and goes downhill from there. It's amazing when you look at it. All four of their defensive tackles that they were counting on, actually five, Tupou opted out, but the four that they thought were going to play, all of them have spent time on injury reserve, if not the whole season on injury reserve. It's crazy.
So Geno will be 33 in March. He's got 2 years left on his deal, $14 million between salary and bonuses next year, $16 million between salary and bonuses the following year. If the Bengals cut him, there'd be $5.2 million in dead money, but they would save $9.6 million. What do you think's going to happen?
From the organization's perspective, it's like he was trying. You know, he was trying to give us everything he's got. You know, it's not a situation where, in Carlos's case, he could play, but he decided he wouldn't play, you know, and obviously that whole thing turned into an ugly situation, an unfortunate ending. I guess maybe not so unfortunate for Carlos. He's out in Seattle and playing well, but you know, the bad taste in everybody's mouth, I think, is unfortunate, because Carlos gave him some good years. Gino has given him everything he's got, and he continued to try to give him everything he's got. That's a tough one, Dan. I mean, I don't know. I wonder if it's going to have to go for a while in the rehab, see how the rehab goes, see how he does come back from it, see if there's a potential that he could get back to a good spot, a good place physically, and make a decision from there. I don't think there'll be any rash decisions made, but it's going to be interesting to see how it all unfolds.
AJ Green's contract is up, unlike Geno Atkins. It certainly sounded, based on his comments after the game the other day, that he's ready to move on. How do you think other teams in the NFL are going to evaluate AJ Green after this year?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, you hear all these coaches, when AJ Green's name is brought up, when we're doing Zooms and conference calls with other head coaches, you know, AJ Green is still, he's still a good player. You know, you gotta take care of AJ Green. You have to double AJ Green, and he has gotten doubled some, but Tyler Boyd's getting doubled a ton, and it has shifted. So I think it is going to be interesting to see how they evaluate AJ Green. You know, what they think that he has left. Is he as explosive coming off the line of scrimmage? Can he run the routes the way he used to run them? You know, sinking his hips, getting in and out of the cuts like he did before, with the explosiveness and the fluidity and everything that goes along with it. But he's certainly not going to be making the kind of money they made as he was tagged this year by the Cincinnati Bengals. That's by the boards. So it'll be interesting to see how many suitors there are out there and what they're talking about. And I guess that's probably why he definitely doesn't want to. AJ's the type of guy that doesn't want to close the door on anything or anybody, really. And no, he doesn't want to burn any bridges. So whatever he does, I think he's going to do with the class that you'd expect out of AJ Green. If it is a departure from Cincinnati, I think it'll be a departure that'll be just the opposite of what Carlos Dunlap, obviously experienced. It'll be a lot different with AJ.
So right now, Bengals fans are hurting. They had so much hope going into the season with Joe Burrow and the great free agent class that the Bengals signed, and really very few of those guys are playing right now. I had this thought this week, and it sounds overly simple and maybe Pollyanna-ish, but I don't care. I'll say it anyway. If they fix the lines on both sides of the ball, everything else falls into place. It's so blatantly obvious. They've just got to get good again on both lines. Now, it's easier said than done to fix it and coach it and everything else, but if you begin there, fix the lines, you can be back in contention in a relatively short period of time.
Agree 100,000%. This season is a great example of it all starts up front. You know, said many times over the years, you can have Hall of Famers at skill positions. If you've got nothing up front to talk about, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You have to give that group time to operate and time to be an opportunity to be efficient and do what they need to do. Obviously, it has not been up to par on either side of the line of scrimmage. Part of it is injury. Part of it is due to ineffective play. And that's a you talk about a terrible cocktail to swallow. Man, that's a bad thing to taste, you know, when you have injury and inefficient play on both sides of the line of scrimmage. You don't really stand a chance. And when you look at it, the money that was spent in free agency and the draft picks that were spent in an effort to try to fix the offensive line, it hasn't panned out for whatever reasons, and the reasons vary, but the bottom line is it just has not panned out. It's not like they haven't tried to fix it, but the fix is not done. It's so far from done. It's like you're just in the beginning stages of doing the fix again. And that's got to be frustrating, because there have been assets spent in terms of draft picks and dollars to try to fix it. try to fix it. And it's nowhere near where it needs to be right now.
Yeah, at least on the offensive line. I mean, an unbelievable amount of resources have been devoted to trying to fix that over the past several years. And unfortunately, by and large, they haven't worked.
And, you know, the defensive line, it's injury is the biggest thing. You know, you look at Geno Daniels. I mean, DJ Reader, it's just unbelievable. Wren, DJ Reader and Wren had the same thing happen, and it's a rare quad injury where an attachment to a quad, you know, snaps. It didn't happen once, it happened twice. So sometimes you sit back and shake your head and you say, wow, is there a black cloud? You know, how big is that black cloud? When's that black cloud going to pass over us and go somewhere else? And, you know, it is. Every team has injury. There's no question. But this one really had injury to people that you look at the quarterback. I mean, all the hope was on Joe Burrow, and he was delivering. He goes down. Sometimes it's not injury, it's who is injured. The ones that you can't afford to lose, you start to lose, then all of a sudden, man, you're in a real struggle.
So looking at the two lines, who are the building blocks that you really feel good about on each side of the ball? On the offensive line, Jonah, Trey Hopkins, anybody else that, you know, you're like, okay, sooner or later, these guys are going to be part of a really good offensive line.
Yeah. I mean, everybody else really, it's like you can poke holes in, you know? If I'm an offensive lineman on this group of linemen that are finishing out the season, I have to put as many unbelievably solid reps on tape as I possibly can, because right now, there's no way that I feel like, man, I'm going to come back and have a job next year. Really. I mean, you have to approach it with a mindset like, all right, we're not in the playoffs. We can't make the playoffs. This is my personal playoffs for the last three games of the season. I have to go against good competition. I'm going against, you know, two of the three opponents that are left are playoff potential teams. Pittsburgh's in already. Baltimore's not, but they could be. So put it in your mind that you're going to try to compete at the highest level you possibly can against pretty good competition, obviously. And if you can do that, you know, finish strong and then give yourself an opportunity to compete next year. But there's nobody that should think that they're locked in and they've got a job available to them. And it's a done deal. There's nobody that should feel that way in the offensive line, in my estimation.
Defensive line, DJ Reader will be back. Sam Hubbard's under contract. I assume they'll try hard to re-sign Carl Lawson based on the season that he's had. Those are your three solid building blocks that you feel really good about on the defensive line if you keep Carl Lawson?
Yeah, I mean, I think Carl Lawson, the thing about him is he works really hard to be good. It's important to him, and he wants to be good. And that's the first thing. Is the work ethic. And I see a strong work ethic with that kid. I really do. And I do. DJ Reader was given, I thought he was given the Bengals as advertised. You know, he's a hardworking guy. He's an effort guy. He's got some athletic ability in a big body. I think DJ Reader, you know, is a nice piece as well. You know, Daniels is an interesting situation. What do you do with Daniels? He's on the back nine, but he's a guy that gives you effort out there too. I mean, he plays hard. You know, I do think potentially you do have a few components on the defensive line, but you've got to address the pass rush. I mean, it's just, you have to have somebody that, you know, besides Carl Lawson, who will give you consistent pressure off the edge. Sam Hubbard is a guy that will do the same. And you know, he battled injury this year as well. And when you have an elbow injury, again, man, when you have to, as a lineman, when you have to use your hands and your hands, your elbow, your shoulder, anything in your arms is messed up, it's hard to play. It's hard to be effective. You know, you just can't do it one arm. There's no doubt about it. So I think Sam Hubbard's a piece to work with for sure. I think he gives you everything he's got. He empties the bucket big time. There's absolutely no question about it. I think that what this football team particularly in the defensive and offensive line, has to realize is I had a very good high school coach one time that used this term to me that stuck with me for a long time, competitive endurance. And he said, you know what? He said, the good Lord blessed you, son, with some physical ability. Now it's going to be your mental part of it. Where is your competitive endurance? Is your competitive endurance going to be where no matter what the situation, you're going to give maximum effort. You're going to max out with what you're trying to get done every single snap, no matter what, no matter what other people around you are doing, no matter what the score of the game is, you have to be as consistent a player as you can be. And the way you get to that level is competitive endurance. And you have to start to learn how to deal with that. And I thought, to this day, I remember it. And that's something I think that it's a very simple concept, but it's a very true concept. Competitive endurance is what it's all about. That's what makes great players great. They have these unbelievable physical skills, but their competitive endurance is off the charts, off the charts. Anthony Munoz did not want to lose one rep, not one. I mean, he was infuriated if a guy got a good pressure against him, never mind a sack. And that's what it takes. That's what it takes to be great.
So Monday night against Pittsburgh will be Zach Taylor's 30th game as an NFL head coach. He's only won four so far, so the record is not good. What are some of the things you think Mike Brown's going to consider as he evaluates Zach's future after the season?
I think that obviously he'll evaluate the fact that, you know, this year was such an odd year in terms of the coronavirus, but everybody dealt with that. And the injuries that we're talking about, I think Mike Brown is very sensitive to what you thought you were going to have coming out of training camp and what you ended up having as being two different things. I think he's very sensitive to that as he goes through his evaluation process all the time. But I think the biggest thing that has to be evaluated, does he have the locker room still? And if he doesn't have the locker room still, if he doesn't have the respect of the players and the players, the oars aren't in the water and rowing the same way, if that's not the case, then you have to make a hard decision. But if he feels like that he does have the football team still and he has the respect of the football team still and his coaches and that's the other part of it. Not only Zach, but who stays as assistants and who goes. I mean, that's a big process. And I think obviously the thing that Mike Brown has shown over the years with coaches is patience, obviously. So that's going to be a factor, but it's going to be a process. It's going to be an arduous process for sure.
So the Steelers are here on Monday night looking to beat the Bengals for the 12th consecutive time. They're favored by anywhere from 11.5 to 13 points based on the lines that I've seen. They can clinch the AFC North with a victory against the Bengals. And at this point, at least, we don't know who Cincinnati's starting quarterback is going to be since Brandon Allen hurt his knee last Sunday in the loss to the Dallas Cowboys. It doesn't add up to a great scenario, unfortunately, for the Bengals going into this nationally televised game.
No, it doesn't. They've played the Pittsburgh Steelers 11 times on Monday Night Football and are 3-8. Mike Tomlin is 22-5 against the Cincinnati Bengals. Ben Roethlisberger is better than that. I mean, it doesn't add up to a very promising evening for sure. You know, the defense that this offense that's missing key components, particularly at the quarterback position, is going against a team that's let up the fewest points in the National Football League and is a takeaway machine, tied for most takeaways in the league, has the most interception in the league. I mean, you know, it's staggering. The odds are staggering going into this football game. So bottom line is the Bengals have to bring their at least A game. Hopefully they have an A-plus game. And you got to hope that the Pittsburgh Steelers are continuing to play at the level they've played at the last couple of weeks, which is closer to a C, you know, for them. A lot of drops. That's the kind of thing that you need some help from Pittsburgh, to be quite honest, to be quite frank. If Pittsburgh comes out and plays a clean game and Ben operates like he did the first time they played, he had a season-high 333 yards passing and season-high 4 touchdowns passing, supposedly coming off, you know, a knee injury that they were worried about. He wasn't going to play. He didn't practice all week. So Pittsburgh's Pittsburgh. There's no doubt about it. And I think that they're – you think, Dan, at some point they're going to start to try to commit to running the ball again. 88% of their yards the last two in the two-game losing streak has come from the passing game. 88% of their yards generated. And I thought, honestly, that in the last game, when they went to Buffalo, I thought, they're going to have to commit to the running game. And I'll be a son of a gun. They sure didn't. They didn't even try. So I'm thinking Monday Night Football against the Bengals in December, Pittsburgh has to commit to the running game, don't they? But maybe the coaches feel like with the running backs they have and the offensive line they have and the quarterback they have and the receivers they have, best thing to do, spread them out and throw the football and do the quick passing game. And I mean, Ben leads the NFL in yards, in attempts, in completions, but his yards per attempt are way down in the 20s. I mean, he's dinking and dunking. I mean, I don't even recognize the Pittsburgh offense that's played in the last couple of games. And I think it might be different on Monday night. We'll see.
You got to think they'll try it. They're averaging 54 rushing yards in their last seven games. That is unbelievable for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, the first time the Bengals and Steelers played, Pittsburgh only ran for like 2.2 yards per play. The Bengals ran for six. Now you take the 39-yard fake punt out of there, they still ran for five. They had 20 carries for 100 yards right in the nose, 5 yards a carry. Pittsburgh was at 2.2 on like 20 carries, 20 carries for like, you know, 80 yards, whatever it was. Like 20 carries for 44 yards, I think it was, something crazy like that. So that's not the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, that you know. And then Ben, of course, 333 yards, like we talked about. That at some point in time, I think they're going to commit to more balance as the playoffs get closer. They're going to have more balance than that. They cannot rely on a passing game that multiple receivers are having drops. Tight end, receiver, they're all dropping the football.
Christmas shopping done?
No, not yet.
In that case, I'll wrap up this conversation. You can get to it.
Have a good one, Dan.
I appreciate it. Thanks. I obviously wrap that up because I need to do my Christmas shopping. Now time for this week's one-on-one player interview. My guest is second-year offensive lineman Fred Johnson. After rookie Hakeem Adeniji started last week's game at left tackle and struggled early, Fred wound up playing 62 of the 72 offensive snaps. As a result, it seems likely that Fred will get the start at that position this week. Fred, it's been an interesting year, to say the least. You have played three different positions this season. You tested positive for COVID. How would you describe your second NFL season?
It's like one of them roller coasters that everybody want to, like, either they're too scared to ride or they just, you know, it's just one of those, like, things, like, you don't really want to do it, but you kind of have to. You know, it's been a lot of ups and downs. Me being COVID, switching multiple positions. So it's been a whirlwind.
The highlight of the Bengals season was the Tennessee game when four starting offensive linemen were out. You were one of the guys that came through that day and beat a likely playoff team. How would you describe that day and your pride in what the offensive line achieved?
I was walking in and, like, I seen – You know, Mike Jordan was out there for that game, and I seen him walking out. I was like, "What you want? Like, you forgot something in your car?" He's like, "Nah, like, I can't play today." And I was like, "What the hell we gonna do now?" And it was just one of those things, like, you know what you're going into, you know what type of mentality you're gonna have. And I think we went out there and showed, like, you know, we a definite NFL caliber line, you know, being that it was all the scout team, the bomb squad and stuff. So I feel like we proved a lot of people wrong and showed the attitude that, you know, the Bengals offensive line, you know, what we want to show, like what we want to display. And that game just, you know, worked for us.
We're chatting with Fred Johnson. And then it was shortly after that game when you tested positive for COVID-19. How bad were your symptoms?
My symptoms weren't bad. I think I had symptoms for, like, you know, like 2 to 3 days. Like, when I first tested positive, like, I felt like I could have had a cold or couldn't have a cold. You know, it was just, like, a little off, but it wasn't, like, mind-stankling, like, bedridden or anything like that. And then I had, like, body aches, but I didn't know if that was from the game or just whatever. Then I felt fine, like, for the next, however many days I was in the protocol for 10 days, I felt like I was fine. I was working out in my apartment and stuff, you know, just trying to keep some type of, you know, fitness level. And it was one of the, I was lucky, I was fortunate not to have to go through any severe symptoms and stuff.
We're talking to Fred Johnson. So this year you've started 2 games at right guard, 1 game at right tackle. It looks like you'll be the starting left tackle this week. You're clearly willing to do whatever the team needs, but where are you most comfortable?
I mean, I'm willing to do whatever the team needs. You know, the first start against the Browns at right guard, we had a short week and, you know, I got like my reps there, but there was short reps and you had a big task with playing the Browns. And I felt like I settled in and got comfortable at guard. I gave up a play to Miles Garrett, you know. I feel most comfortable at, you know, tackle, first and foremost, left or right, and just, you know, doing whatever. But if the team needs me to play guard or whatever, like we don't have nobody else, then I'll gladly, you know, accept that role because I played guard for 4 years at Florida. So, you know, but I feel way better at tackle.
How about center? Could you play center?
If it was a dire must, if I had to. But we got to be under center the whole game. We have to be under center. I'm not snapping it back there.
No shotgun snaps for you.
No shotgun snaps. Unless you try to run a fumble rooski or something, but that's about it.
I'd like to see that. We're talking to Fred Johnson. So this week it's Monday Night Football against the
Monday Night Football against the Steelers.
Yeah, the team you started your NFL career with last year. So you blocked these guys in training camp and in practice. What stood out from that experience?
From just being with Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
I mean, just the standard of the stuff that they do it, you know, how you walk into the locker room, how you know what I'm saying, handle yourself on the field and meetings and just every little detail about your day with the Steelers was something that I got adapted to and things of that nature. And just in practice, like it's, you know what I'm saying, it's either kill or be killed, and you got to show what you got every day. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Mike Tomlin used to preach, find a new problem, you know, in training camp and things of that nature. Like, with God, like, you get coached about something, don't let it be something that, you know, keeps happening. You know what I'm saying? So that could lead to you being cut and being an undrafted rookie out of Florida, you know, trying to make that team with all those guys that they had on that squad. I was just blessed and favored to, you know, understand the playbook as soon as I did and, you know, have the tangibles that they was looking for and made the 53, you know, stay with them for 8 weeks, you know, just waiting on my chance to, you know, get in the game and stuff. And I was blessed to, you know, thankful for the opportunity and things of that nature. We're excited to play against them this week and see what happens.
So when you're in training camp and you're blocking Cam Hayward and TJ Watt, et cetera, how does that prepare you for the NFL?
It prepares you a lot. I mean, just going against those guys, they're high caliber guys. I mean, look at their whole defensive front. Like, those are, you know, premier guys, you know, at each of their positions respectfully. And just going against them and experience, like, you know, every snap, you know, is just something that prepares you for anything, really. And the guys on the O-line, you know, the vets who were there, Ramon Foster's, you know, Vanilla Nuevas, Pouncey's, you know, they were guys who, you know, you looked up to and stuff. And, like, I learned a lot from that unit as a whole, and especially individual pieces, like, of how not to carry yourself coming from college to a professional team. And that was things that, like, I felt like I needed to know, felt like I needed to learn there, and I did. And I got waived, and, you know, that's just the way the cookie crumbled.
So you're from Florida.
Yes.
It's going to be cold on Monday night. How has your body adjusted?
It's just cold. There's no adjusted to it. I don't have a thermostat on my right shoulder or anything to change the temperature. But I mean, I'm getting used to it kind of more shorter now. We were just out there in the snow and I didn't really feel cold, but it was snowing. So I knew it was cold, but I mean, I'm getting used to it now. Last game was pretty cold. So nothing really too much to say about it when you're on the field, you know, running around, you know, trying to hit people and stuff. But on the sideline, it's probably the worst time.
Once you're running around out there, you won't feel it at that point.
Yeah, you won't at all. It's perfectly fine then.
Fred, appreciate your time. Best of luck against the Steelers. Happy holidays.
No problem. Appreciate it.
The Bengals Booth Podcast is presented by Bud Light Seltzer. It's light and refreshing with a hint of fruit flavor. The Pittsburgh Steelers come to town on Monday night with an 11-2 record and an 11-game head-to-head winning streak against the Bengals. Furthermore, Ben Roethlisberger is 26-7 in his career against Cincinnati, including 15-2 at Paul Brown Stadium. I know, it's sickening. Ike Taylor was an outstanding cornerback for the Steelers from 2003 to 2014 and won a pair of Super Bowl rings. He's currently one of the hosts of the Believe in Steelers podcast. And this week, he joined Lapp and Wayne Box Miller on the Bengals Game Plan show to preview Monday night's game.
So, Ike, the big buzz around the National Football League now is, who is this Pittsburgh Steeler offense? We've never seen the Pittsburgh Steelers not commit to running the football like they haven't committed this year. You know, they're just not getting it done running the football. But, of course, Ben is Ben. But it's more of a horizontal, you know, not dink and dunk, but short intermediate passing game kind of thing. In your opinion, are they doing what's best, obviously, with the personnel they have? What do you think about the Steelers' offense?
Boom, you just hit it on the head. That's your personnel. So when you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers' offense, you're not looking in the running back room and be like, okay, this is going to be us. You're looking at that wide receiver core and be like, okay, this is us. The only thing when it comes down to this wide receiving core is the drops. Of course, the
right.
Pittsburgh Steelers lead the league in drops, but at the same time, you saw the difference when Deontay Johnson was on the field and when he was off the field.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the energy that he brought when he's off the field to when he's on the field. So the only thing about that, he's the one dropping the ball.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why Big Ben has went to this quick short game passing game, one, to keep the pressure up off of him, two, to get the balls and playmakers like a Deontay Johnson. It's just the boys got to catch the ball and they got to do it consistently, especially in this cold weather.
You know, Ike, when you think about guys dropping the ball like that, especially early in the Buffalo game, you guys as defensive backs, do you try to move quickly to get in their head and just remind them about that?
100%. 100%. I got to let, every time I'm facing you, I got to let you know, hey, bro, you about to drop. They just throw my way, and they ain't even got to cover you because you're going to drop it anyway. So, you know, I hate to say it, but in a game of football, when you're on the field, you got to kick a man while he's down. That's just how it is. Because it's one-on-one, mano-a-mano, you got to kick him while he's down. Because I guarantee you, when he's up, he's going to be calling you every name but your name in the book since he's smoking you on routes and touchdowns.
A lot of that goes on. There's no doubt about that. Keith Butler, defensive coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Defensive coordinators stay around Pittsburgh for a long time. I mean, a lot of them had a lot of success. Is Keith Butler the kind of defensive coordinator that listens to his players, particularly guys who have been around a while? The thing I admire about Pittsburgh the most is the players that have played together for a while. They don't even need coaches to make adjustments. These guys are still good in understanding what the scheme and the concept's all about. When you guys come off the field, Keith Butler obviously values the opinion of the players coming off the field and telling them what they're seeing, doesn't he?
You got to. In order to be successful as Coach Butts is as a DC, you're only as successful as the adjustments you make, one, two, listening to your players because they're on the field. You know, I think as a defense coordinator, sometimes you can go in with a game plan and your players are telling you something different because they're on the field. So now you have to adjust to your game plan.
Sure.
I think Coach Butts does that well, if you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
You know, when you think about the secondary the Steelers have now, what do you like about them and what do you think may be a challenge for them?
I think they can do a better job of tackling
mm-hmm.
in open space. You know what I'm saying? That's when your good secondaries win championship ball games. Yeah, a guy might catch the ball, but once he catches the ball, I'm on my back and I'm making that tackle. It's not going to be a 5-yard catch turn into a 30-yard game. It's going to be a 5-yard catch and a 5-yard catch right there. So the only thing I can kind of criticize the Pittsburgh Steelers secondary on is really a good criticism, is making sure they secure the tackle once the wide receiver catches the ball.
at the linebacker position, you talk about a position that's been hit by injury. Bush, Spillane, Williams, Dupree. I mean, man, the only guy that's, you know, kind of avoiding it, I guess, at this point is T.J. Watt, who's having a great year. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, they don't cry and moan about that. It's always next man up with Mike Tomlin, isn't it?
Ain't no lie, right? Don't you see it? Like, don't get it twisted. The score is 0-0. Damn near. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Coach T damn near went out there with eight defensive backs.
Yep.
You know, so I'm telling you, man, Coach T and Coach Butch, man, it's really next man up. And a lot of teams say that, but they really don't have the depth or the knowledge or the IQ as coaches to actually do that. Coach T, with that defense, and Coach Butch, they gave the Pittsburgh Steelers offense plenty of opportunities to at least get some points on the board or try to win that ball game. So, yeah, it's really next man up. And if Coach T feel like his linebacking crew is depleted, which they are, he's going to adjust and he's going to get other extra guys out there. And at that time, during the Buffalo Bills game, it was the defensive backs.
You know, one of the things that – when you look at this team and you look at people that played in Pittsburgh, whether they move on to other places or coaches that move on to other places, it says something about the way Coach Tomlin talks and the way he communicates. Dave Lapham here, NFL veteran, talks about that he's just probably one of the best communicators he's ever seen.
Man, I've seen a lot of Hall of Fame players that know the game very well, but they're not able to teach it.
Yep.
They're not able to relay the message.
Right.
And that's what makes good teachers great. And that's what makes good coaches great. They understand the game, but they understand whether you're a teacher who have a student and whether you're a coach, and this is my player. Every player won't learn the same. How as a teacher or how as a coach can I simplify and make everybody understand what I'm saying? And I was talking about this on my show, the Believe in Still the podcast. All I've been around was Hall of Fame coaches. Dick LeBeau, Russ Grimm, Mike Munchak, Ray Horton probably had the best IQ of any coach I've ever had as a defensive back coach.
Yeah.
Cornell Lake, who actually played the game. DP, who actually played the game. Had a Hall of Fame owner in Paul Rooney. So I've just been surrounded by greatness. And what these guys did well was simplify and got everybody on the same page, regardless on how difficult you might thought this defense or how complicated you thought this defense was. And that's the art, because everybody can't do it. You know what I'm saying? So and it forced me, because I wound up coaching my son's football team to three championships. I've learned how the coaches coach me to do the same with my kids, and it's all relaying the message. So I just go back and rewind what I just told y'all. A lot of guys have a lot of information in their head, and I'm talking about Hall of Famers, and they know the game and they can play the game, but they can't relay the game or they can't teach as the great ones do.
I'll tell you what, your son and his teammates are lucky to have you coaching them, man. Three championships. That's pretty strong. So Mike Tomlin obviously is defensive oriented as a head coach. So,
Correct. Obviously,
he and Keith Butler have a great relationship, working relationship. Mike knows probably, you know, I can make some suggestions, but I'm not gonna step on Keith's toes. Keith is the coordinator, but Mike, I'm sure, has a lot of input, doesn't he?
You goddamn right. I mean, you don't forget, Coach T was a defensive back coach when Coach Groove, when they won the Super Bowl. Coach T wound up going to Minnesota, being a defensive coordinator. Guess who was number one in the run stop, and we was number two. It was the Minnesota Vikings number one stop in the run, and we was right under them at number two. But Coach T, his love is secondary.
Mm-hmm.
He loves his secondary guys. That's why he went and got Minka. You know, that's why he went and got Joe.
Yeah.
So, and usually, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, we usually drive corners, but we've been missing a lot. But when you got a sneaky free agent guy like a Mike Hilton, you know what I'm saying, who comes in, when you got a guy like Cam Sutton who comes in the slot, either they can play in the slot or they can play on the outside. But that's Coach T forte. But please don't get it twisted. Coach T felt like over the course of his coaching career, he's learned the best from a Tony Dungy in a 4-3 and the best in a 3-4 out of a Dick LeBeau.
Yep.
You know, Ike, when you think about the game of football now, you know, you're watching, you're a fan, you're a coach. What do you like about the game now? Obviously, the way you hit has changed a lot. Do you think it would have been hard for you to adjust?
No. I was going through this adjustment as I was playing, and Coach T did a great job of making sure we adjusted. Like the 2003, 2006 Pittsburgh Steelers, Coach T said, "Hey, man, we ain't getting away with these hits no more."
Yeah.
This is where the, I'm telling y'all, this is where the league is going. I know y'all may disagree with it and call it fantasy football or powder puff football, but I'm telling y'all, old school cats, this is where the league is going. And goddamn, Coach T was at least 3 years ahead of his time. So he already was, you know, transcending into one of those coaches who understood and had a clear mind and seen it before everybody else. So he was talking to us before everybody else. That's why you see the Pittsburgh Steelers rarely getting penalized for illegal hits, because it's been instilled in us since Coach T was there, and Coach T did a great job of just teaching and practicing and making sure we're aware of what the league is going.
So let me ask you, in terms of injury, we talked about Spillane, obviously, Williams, Dupree's out for sure, Hayden. How beat up are the Steelers? How many guys do you think will be able to make the dance, and who's not going to be able to?
Man, I don't know. And that's a tough question. That's a real good question. But I do know schematically wise they'll be ready on defense.
Right.
That's what I will know. You know, just looking at Coach T and Coach Butts, they're gonna look at their roster. They're gonna see who can help them from game to game. From game to game, you're gonna see a different lineup, and that's what I think happens. Coach T to me is a Hall of Fame coach, and I play with Coach Kyle. He's a Hall of Fame coach. I think Coach T will get in the Hall of Fame just as well.
Yep.
But when you have a coach that can sit back and not be stubborn and say, "This is what I know, this is what I'm doing," and mess up your personnel or don't adjust to your personnel, that's destruction. Coach T, as we can see, with a depleted linebacker core, he's adjusting week in, week out on what he have on that roster schematically and going in the game and at least giving this team a chance to win.
Organizationally, three head coaches since the Vietnam War, Knoll Hall of Fame, Cowher Hall of Fame, Tomlin will be Hall of Fame. That is putting the bat on the ball, man. That is one hell of a decision-making organization right there in terms of picking head coaches.
That started with the Rooneys. And I'm going to go ahead and give Mr. Art a big shout-out because he don't usually get it. He's a man behind the scenes. That starts with the whole Rooney family. You know, so I just tip my hat to the Rooney family. But like you say, when you got three coaches, that's stability. And I tell you this, we learned that as soon as you walked in that Pittsburgh organization on that second floor, you saw them Lombardis, and you saw the Mean Joe Greens, the Lynn Swans, Franco Harris, Terry Bradshaws, the Jack Lambs. You seen all them guys just come around, the Mel Blunts. You seen all them guys come around often, and you see guys just stay and live in Pittsburgh. And there's a reason why you stay and live in Pittsburgh. Like, Pittsburgh is really a still a city, you know. But I got to give it to the Rooneys because they treat their players like family.
Yep.
Like, you don't just work for me. You know, when an owner, you know your kid or know your girlfriend or know your wife's name, or when you come downstairs after a meeting and he didn't gave everybody gifts for their kids, that's really family.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm getting this off of other guys coming from other different organizations, and as soon as they walk in the door, they just see it and feel it like, I see why y'all win. Mm-hmm. I see why y'all got this brotherhood. Mm-hmm. I see why y'all have this camaraderie. Like, y'all really are a family. And that's what you got to love about the Pittsburgh Steelers organization. But please don't ever get it twisted. It starts with the Rooney family.
You know, Ike, when you think about the matchup with the Bengals, you guys have had the Bengals number for quite a while. And as we wrap up here, talk about, did you guys view playing the Bengals as much of a rivalry as the Bengals did here of late?
Not at all. Not one bit.
Was it Cleveland?
Not at all. It was the Baltimore Ravens.
The Ravens, like, sure.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's, when you talk about the AFC North and winning the AFC North and going to Super Bowls and making it to the playoffs for the past 20 years, who are you talking about?
Right.
Either the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Baltimore Ravens.
Sure.
Okay, let's bring it back even further. If you want to go to the early 90s, who are you talking about getting into the playoffs, trying to hoist in Lombardi? You talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Baltimore Ravens. And that's just how it's been for at least 25 years. But I tell you this, and I said this on my show today as well. I said between Cleveland, the Baltimore Ravens, and the Cincinnati Bengals, Pittsburgh will have to draft a franchise quarterback this up-and-coming draft.
Right.
And the reason why is you got, I call him Joe Cool, y'all call him Joe Burrow.
Yep.
You got Joe Cool sitting in the pocket, a natural born leader.
You're right.
It's crazy how a young guy can come as a rookie and you can see the eyes sitting in the huddle undivided on this man when he's calling the plays, ready, break, all synchronized, and let's at least try to win the ball game. You can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I saw that LSU. Like everybody was getting mad at me when I saw Joe Cool at LSU and was like, boy, he's going to be something special. He's going to be something special in the league. And he just – when you have a rookie who went as high as Joe, who can pretty much say whatever he wants, as in talking down about his teammates on the season and not having a good offensive line right now and not able to win ball games because of the defense sometimes. But when you have a rookie that says – and probably he's the best guy on offense. Say, it's me, it's I that needs to get better.
We'll have more on the Monday night matchup on the Bengals Pep Rally Show this Friday afternoon from 3 to 6 on ESPN 1530. That's going to do it for this episode of the Bengals Booth Podcast, brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer. Refresh the game. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Horde, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.